Hello, everyone. In today's episode, we talk about fitness goals versus fitness systems, evidence-based versus science-based, and what this all means for you and your workouts. Please enjoy.
Welcome to the Perfect Workout Podcast, where fitness meets simplicity. I'm Kyle Recchia, CEO of the Perfect Workout. I'm joined by Jim Keen, our Director of Training. We hope you enjoy today's episode.
Welcome back, everybody. Jim, we're in Colorado.
We did it. We made it.
It's a beautiful day.
It's gorgeous.
I'm happy to be here.
And here we are inside.
Yeah. Exactly.
Talking shop.
We should wrap this up and get outside.
Yeah. This will be the last one.
Actually, we should talk about outside at some point. I guess we did in the sleep episode.
Yeah. The out of doors.
Yeah.
Outside.
Yeah.
It's important.
All right. Well, we won't do that today.
Yeah, not
today, I actually want to talk about this subject by kicking off this episode with a story. I was at the Ancestral Health Symposium a few years ago. And this was at UCLA, and it was a really cool conference on just, you know, broad topic health. There was a speaker there that was talking about cancer. This guy, his cancer had run rampant in his families, unfortunately. I mean, he lost his mom to it, his sister to it, et cetera. It was really moving and powerful subject. And so his background was actually in nutrition and more sort of like diet nutrition when it comes to the health industry. And so his goal was to really do some really deep research and diving into what can I do for my family and myself to help prevent cancer or to help improve the outcomes of cancer, et cetera, in my family. So he had a really, you know, big motivation here.
Strong why.
Yeah, so I'll cut to the end. The moral of the story was he was surprised and excited and pleased to find that across the sort of gambit when it comes to exercise, nutrition, meditation, stress, you know, lowering sugar, all these sort of ketogenic diet, I mean, he went deep in all of it. The thing that he found that had the biggest impact on cancer outcomes was strength training, which is, of course, why we're bringing it up in our episodes.
Hey, that's what we do.
Yeah. And so he got into some of the theories and some of the mechanisms that we think matter. But at the end of the day, the truth was it just did, right? And so what I'm trying to say here is there's this idea of evidence-based versus science-based. One of our core values at the Perfect Workout is evidence-based. And that includes one of two to three pillars. One of the pillars is the scientific method, right? Research, meta-analysis of research, randomized controlled trials, these sort of things that are really great and they're really important. And a lot of time, if we don't have that pillar, we throw the baby out with the bathwater, right? If we can't have that, then it's not evidence-based. So why don't you talk a lot, you might be able to give a better analogy. Let's talk a little bit about evidence-based versus science-based, because what I want to do in this episode is actually get us over to when people are looking to set goals and achieve different outcomes.
Right.
What are the things we can do around that, and how can we make sure we're on track if we don't have a scientific study to prove that we're doing the right thing?
Yeah, there are certain people who, unfortunately, if it's not in a randomized placebo-controlled trial that has been peer-reviewed and published not just in any journal, but in a respectable, reputable journal, it doesn't exist to them. And they cannot think, they cannot observe, they cannot have thought experiments, they can't form hypotheses. They just take the published thing that has been peer-reviewed as the gospel, and then that's it. And they behave as if that's the only truth. So this is where it can be taken too far. That's evidence-based and science-based are different in that respect. Science-based is a scientific method. We observe things, and then we think on purpose, and we have a hypothesis that is generated, and then we test it with an experiment, and then we have a conclusion, which then produces another hypothesis, and the cycle repeats. But that's the basic question of how do you know a thing is true, is the basic question. But there's some people, they come out of college, and they have their kinesiology degree or their exercise science degree or any field, and the problem is the peer review process ensures that everybody thinks the same. If someone does not think the same, then that does not pass the peer review process. And so progress very rarely then in any field comes from the inside. Mm. Progress, it's like it gets gummed up in the works. It usually takes an outsider to produce progress. So with the things, a lot of people like to say things like the plural of anecdote is not data, which is to say just because your one personal experience happened like this and it happened a couple of times, that doesn't mean that that's data. And of course it is data. So it's a nonsense statement because it is data. You might say it's low quality data, which is fine. That's your opinion. But it is data. It is, we can record it. We can observe it. We can build new hypotheses based on it. So if you notice something that goes against what the randomized placebo-controlled trials say, whatever shall you do? Mm-hmm. What you ought to do is think and go, well, how come these guys, the evidence-based guys, say this, but they reject my evidence showing this? Mm-hmm. And it only takes one black swan to completely explode the hypothesis that only white swans exist.
Right.
So you can have a mountain of evidence in one direction, but if it's falsified by just one piece of evidence, this all is a moot point. It's null and void, both. And so you don't give it any more credence because we saw a black swan. So your whole thing, you've spent decades, your entire career in some cases, endorsing, promoting, supporting, and finding evidence for. Sorry, we did this other thing that actually works better. So the idea of evidence-based versus science-based is important. And for us, one of our key principles is evidence-based. And we include the evidence of our eyes and our ears and what we can notice and observe, even if it contradicts the randomized placebo-controlled trials that were done on a very small segment of the population that might not even relate to us, that hasn't been replicated in many cases. There's a replication crisis, if you haven't noticed, in the peer-reviewed world of nutritional science and health science. You'll have a study, and then in order for it to be legit, you have to repeat it. And then they try to replicate the results and it didn't work. Oh no. And you never hear that part. You just hear in Men's Health or in your USA Today, studies show that this and this. And then 7 years later, they try to replicate it. They fail and it doesn't show up. So.
And so why is this really important? I mean, and for me, you know, I'm sure you'd say the same thing. I'm grateful for science. I'm grateful for the scientific method.
Right.
I'm great. We have a lot of great outcomes because of the scientific method. And that doesn't mean that's the only thing, right? My experience matters. My experience of others matters. And then, of course, there's the scientific method. I recommended a book the other day to some people called Ingredients. It was a really cool book. And basically, he tries to tackle this idea of processed foods. He tackles some other cool things too. It's like this cool book that has a Cheeto on the cover. and he does a great job of describing the problems with the scientific method, especially when it comes to health and especially when it comes to nutrition. Because epidemiological studies, these studies of just observing people, are so unbelievably hard to do, right? We can't put 100 people in a chamber. You've got a good story or a good example here. Like,
Yeah. The limits of the scientific method is like having an RCT, a randomized controlled trial for parachutes. And parachutes are used around the globe all the time, every day. And there's never been one study to prove they work. Because there's never been one study where you have one group with parachutes, one group who thinks they have parachutes. That's a placebo group. They have a pack, but there's no parachute in it.
They don't find out, right?
They don't find out until they jump. They just have laundry. And then there's one group with no parachute at all, and they jump. That's a control group. We have to see what happens with the control group. Otherwise, you can't rely on the data from the two groups that had the packs.
Right.
So we're going to have three groups, and you all jump, and we need an RCT to prove the parachutes work. We don't have that. So against all evidence-based principles, against all scientific thinking, we now have parachutes still being used. That's weird. And they're every military in the world and all these air shows and everyone's using the parachutes, but there is no RCT to back it up. It's not science-based.
Yeah.
It's not evidence-based. It's not science-backed. And no one cares even a little bit because it works.
Yeah. So you one thing I think that's really good to think about here is sort of first principles. If you're going to observe your environment like this person and say, wow, there's evidence. And it might not be the strongest or the most profound.
But I noticed,
and I have noticed that there's evidence that the outcome of cancer is improved for those people that are exercising and strength training. And then the risk of testing that is very, very low, right?
Right.
That's a principle I think is really important to keep in mind. If it's not strong enough from your perspective, maybe it's one of the three pillars of evidence, but the risk is also low, to test this, you're not jumping out of the plane with the no parachute.
Yeah.
You're just exercising for a little bit of time. The upside is massive.
A couple times a week for 20 minutes, like we do, it's like, that's not a big risk
right.
for a cancer patient.
Yeah, the downside is minimal. The upside is massive.
Yeah.
Then you know, continue down that path. So let's kind of bring this over to something, and I know this sounds like a jump, but it ties together. We like the acronym NSV. We call this non-scale victories. I heard a story the other day of a member who started strength training at some friends of ours. It's not the perfect workout. And not too long into this, they did a body scan and they found that they had gained a pound of muscle, which is awesome. And we won't go into that here, but we've already talked a lot about just how profound that is for this person. They also gained a pound of fat. And so for them, they were like, well, that's really disappointing. I'm going to stop. Okay. We talked about this in an episode not too long ago, so we won't go deep here, but there's this idea of outside of monitoring changes in body composition, which is very important, and outside of monitoring changes in your strength and muscle, which is very important, there are sort of dozens of other benefits to strength training that are the quote-unquote non-scale victories, and it's important to measure those things. At the same time, many people have goals, outcomes they want, that are related to those non-scale victories, but they're unable to achieve them because they're still just really focused on whether or not they achieved the outcome. So you do a great job of talking about systems versus goals, especially related to those non-scale victories. Let's go deeper there.
So the basic idea of systems versus goals is first brought up by Scott Adams, the author and cartoonist of the Dilbert comic strip. And he has several fascinating books, but one of them spoke specifically about system thinking versus goal thinking. And goal thinking is I have a goal and I'm going to work towards that goal. And then you do, and then you get it. And the entire time you feel like a loser, you embody the state of not having achieved the goal. So you wake up and you're a loser. You wake up and you haven't done it. You wake up the next day, you still haven't done it. And the entire time you're losing, you're losing, you're losing, you're losing. And then finally you get the goal and you won for one day when you got the goal. And then what do? You choose a new goal and now you're a loser again. And this repeats. So it's sort of an inefficient way to do it. And you're not supporting yourself in the way you might think you are because you've heard so much about you have to choose a goal. You have to be hard charged and you have to go get them. Sure. But maybe a better way and something that's shown to be a little bit more effective and a little bit better for your mental health too is developing a system that, if applied on a daily basis, will move you towards that goal and eventually achieve it. So every day you do the system, you're a success. And success is the progressive realization of a worthy ideal. So every day you do your system, I'm a success today. I won the day. And now you have months of where you're winning, you're winning, you're winning, you're winning, you're winning. And eventually you get the goal, but it's more like an afterthought. It's more like how day becomes night. There's no moment. Right. We're like, it's night now. You just look around, you go, it got dark. So you only notice it in retrospect. So when you prioritize systems versus goals, you're not so hung up on this one outcome. What you're hung up on is becoming a better person in this area. So where it comes to the non-scale victories, it's whether it's a better cancer outcome, whether it's an improvement in your blood work, whether it's I don't feel like I hurt in the mornings anymore. My chronic pain is lessened. I notice I can last longer on the golf course and at the 14th and 15th hole, I'm not getting tired. I can play with my grandkids, all these non-scale victories. Those are best accomplished through systems that you put in. Not, I have the goal to last longer in my golf. What can I do towards this goal? Because then once you hit that goal, all those habits just fall off.
Yeah.
And you haven't even improved yourself, really. You've done this for this purpose during this discrete period of time, but you haven't built up the habits and built up the patterns that you're going to need to display in the future to help you do the next thing. Instead, if somebody says, well, what would make me able to do that? Well, what if I got up every day and did this? What if I ate like this every day? What if I journaled? What if I did this? What if I... And no matter what the area is, if you design your own system and your focus is just on today, one day at a time, I'm going to run my machine. I'm going to run this system today. You'll wake up 3 months from then, 6 months from then, 9 months from then. And all of a sudden, all those things that would have been goals 9 months prior, now those are all just things that happen.
Right.
Because it's something a guy like me does. You know, it becomes natural and it doesn't take willpower. It doesn't take maniacal focus on a goal. It takes, that's external. This is internal focus. That willpower and that discipline, focus that internally on your system and you will be surprised and delighted by all the ways that things happen for you that you didn't even plan on that would have been goals before that are the end result of you embodying and running your system.
Exactly. I love that. So why do we bring these two things up that almost seem a little random? Evidence base, what does that include? Is it science, scientific evidence, or is it just evidence altogether? Right. Why do we include that with this topic on systems and goals? Because when you're focused on a goal and it's going to be very linear, like I want to lose fat and you haven't achieved that, many times people just quit.
Right.
When you're focused on the system, like you said, A, we can look at that system over time and we can tweak it based on evidence. And it can be evidence like great research that just came out that gives us some powerful tools of, ooh, let's try this. Or it can be evidence like, hey, this thing that you're trying to achieve, this system that we've been using for a while is not really meeting that thing. Let's tweak the system,
yep.
Not change the goal necessarily. The other great thing, like you just said, is in order to design systems that really help us with a specific health outcome, we get the benefit of achieving many health outcomes.
Right.
If you're focused on fat loss, our wellness coaches, our PeakWell program, they talk about this a lot. We understand, we like to say that people are have different biopsychosocial needs. Their biology is all different. Their psychology is all different. And their social, their environment, their belief systems are all different. And so we want to tailor a lot and often around their system to find the little habits that they can do consistently and adhere to achieve that goal.
Right.
And so when they get to the end of this and say, wow, I have achieved those 5 pounds of fat loss, but I'm also less stressed and I'm also sleeping better and my hormones are about, why? Because the system we did, looking at the evidence they're experiencing around them in their own body, et cetera, that we were able to tweak for that outcome was enough to improve all these other NSBs and the main outcome that they want.
Right. Yes. Well, it's like when people, goal thinking can often, like you said, it makes you quit sometimes. I still remember this fat loss client, large man, very large. And he said, so how long you think this will take to get me from his 400 something down to my goal weight, of 190. And he was, 5'11", 6 foot tall. I said, I did crunch some numbers. I said, well, it's going to be about 2.5 years.
Mm.
And what he said to me was, 2.5 years, I'll be 50 by then. And I said, well, how old are you going to be if you don't do it?
Mm-hmm.
And the idea being he could only think of the goal and how long the goal was going to take. And it disheartened him.
Mm-hmm.
It made him maybe want to not even start in the first place. So what the work was to switch that from, listen, I know 190 is like your goal. Let's forget about 190. Let's look at your day to day. And let's have that be the goal. Your system on the day, that's the goal.
Right.
And we just need to rinse and repeat, get really good at that, and do it about 700 or 800 times, and then you'll be cool in the gang. But thinking of these goals and getting married to the goal can often lead you astray because you're too into it, and it makes you quit when it doesn't happen on your timeline.
Yeah, absolutely. So the focus here is on systems, and the focus around your systems and your unique abilities and your unique desires and your unique habits, et cetera, is the full gamut of evidence. And we look at all things, what's going on with you? What have we experienced in the world? What does the data have to say?
Right.
These pillars all come into play to really pressure test designing that system correctly to achieve those goals and the other goals that you'll achieve along the way.
I love it.
Very cool. All right, man, that's systems and goals. And episode number of something.
Number something or other.
Cool. I'll see you in the next one.
Next time.
Thanks for tuning in to the Perfect Workout Podcast. We hope you found today's episode inspiring and actionable. If you're ready to take the next step in your fitness journey, visit us at theperfectworkout.com for more resources or follow us on Facebook, Instagram, or YouTube. Don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, and share this episode with someone who could benefit. Together, let's make fitness simple, empowering, and a part of life well lived. See you next time.